tremendously. But before that house that he was in charge of, before that Roman cohort of men that he was in charge of could become a home of Christians, there had to be the new birth experience. Now, it is my premise that if you know Jesus Christ in a personal relationship and you've dedicated your life to him for the rest of your life and his spirit has moved in your life, then you are born again. There's no question about the new birth experience. But I do have this question. Where and why does attention come in our lives and how we live? When we're alone, when we're with our families, those things that we do that we never share with people like Pastor John or other maturing Christians because we kind of feel ashamed of it. But then when we come to church, what we do is we correspond with God about some things and we leave off the important things. So before we get into the message, what I'd like to do is I'd like you to look at this man, Cornelius, and we're going to ask, who was he in his day? Now, as we ask that question, who he was in his day, I'd like to ask you this, who are you today? That's what you have to answer. After his encounter with God, I said before, he was the first Gentile convert that we have recorded in the whole of the New Testament. Now, of course, we know that we had Jewish proselytes in Jerusalem during Pentecost, but here we see specifically God is communicating to us that the Gentile is brought into the family of faith. And then we would also say that he was obviously a man that was fed up with the pragmatic religion of his day. The influence of the Greek culture had carried away Cornelius and his entire idealism, and we are caught in a culture today that is not Hellenistic, but we are caught in a culture that is full of hell. And so we've been carried away by basically the same thing that this man was carried away with. The influence of the Greek culture was pervasive throughout society at that time. There were pagan cults which were fully allowed by the Roman Empire during that time. They had festival games that were associated with their pagan cults. You've got to see the city of Caesarea that Cornelius lived in. They had theaters, amphitheaters, temples, gymnasiums, baths, fountains, colonnades, which were built in Greek style. Hellenism had just taken over the entire society. The rich were rich and the poor were poor. They weren't ashamed to live like it, just the way it is in Los Angeles today. All of these influences helped to direct the mind of this Roman citizen to adopt the phrase that we all adhere to, and the phrase goes like this: when in Rome, finish it for me. Do as the Romans do. Cornelius was right at home in Caesarea. He did what the Romans did. He did it very well. They paid him very well as a centurion. He was in a cherished position. And listen, since he was stationed in Caesarea, that was a position to be stationed in. If you know anything about that city, it was kind of like going to the French Riviera during mid-June, a nice place to be stationed at. All right, the second thing that I would ask is, what about his status? In other words, what about his status in life? We're going to transfer this. What about your status in life? We have to question Cornelius, but I also want to question you. What is your status right now? I was reading from a book called The New Testament in Its Social Environment, and I found this paragraph, and I'd like to share it with you. Because I think that when I read this paragraph to you, you will know the status of this man in Caesarea at the time that this text was penned about him. In terms of power and influence and money, and the perception of the time, we can divide the population of Rome into two main categories, those which influenced and those which had no influence. In other words, the two main categories was you had a group of people that influenced the world that they lived in, and then you had another group of people, no one even cared about their existence. It would also be said that these individuals were the honorable and the humble, those who governed and those who were governed, those who had property and those who did not. The upper category was very small, and the lesser category was very large. Now look at what's happening in America today. You have more people that's getting on that very large category of the unemployed, of the frustrated, of the chaotic. You have more uneducated people in this society today than in the time of this nation. You have more individuals today that have given up. Here recently, I was speaking with someone in my family, and they said, oh yes, I'm on the dole, and I'm going to stay on the dole because that's the way I want it. I want everything free for my people, and I want all the taxation in the world to go to my people because I don't want to do anything. That person in my family has given up. They've not only given up on themselves, but they've given up on a society that is supposed to work. That's just the way it was in Rome, my friend. It was an inequality in the scale of justice. Rome was the most powerful civilization at that time, and God used that civilization to bring salvation in. And if you read the book, the fall of the Roman Empire was greater than Humpty Dumpty. It fell, and they never recovered. It is my premise to say that America is almost on the way out, and we Christians must do something about it. Third thing that I would ask you to look at is, what were the major influences of this man's day? The single figure at the top of the socioeconomic pyramid was the single figure which was called the emperor. You have to realize, see, some of you think that it's the president in Washington. No, it's not here. I would say that the single figure that is controlling our economic system here is the grand old dollar. See, that dollar has become our god. Well, in Cornelius' day, the single figure which controlled everything was the emperor. Whatever Caesar did, it got done. Whatever he said, it got done. Whatever he put into law and decree, it was done. This influenced this man where he was. In other words, the emperor supported all of the members of the imperial household and the officials of the cultural administration in Rome. Let me tell you about these guys. There were a party called the Senatorial Party. They were about 600 in number. These guys were worth at least 100 million each. That meant that when you were elected a senator in Rome that controlled these different provinces, you had to have a money base of about $100 million worth of good, solid gold in the bank. And I'm telling you, if you really do a historical research of the time, Caligula Caesar, do you know what that guy would do? He would hold big feasts and have all these guys come in the palace and eat, and all of a sudden Caligula would say, I'm sick of you. This senator is a traitor. This one is. Take him out and kill him and take all the money and put it in my bank. Friends, let's come back to the 90s right now. What's going on? You remember that guy that took over the savings and loan? Folk lost hundreds of millions of dollars. People are ripping off people right and left in the same society that we're living in. It hasn't changed. When in Rome, do what, church? Do as the Romans do. We're living in the same kind of society today. These senators, do you know what they also did? They even commanded the armies. They administered some of the Roman provinces, contributed to civic and cultural projects, fulfilled ceremonial priesthoods, and like I said, there were 600 of them. By definition, they were fabulous. They were just wealthy. They had money coming out of everywhere. They didn't know what to do with it. This is the kind of society that this man lived in that Christ spoke to. Now, let's look at the place of our man on the social scale. The place of our man on the social scale. Now, I'm not talking about the scale of his rank as a Roman soldier over 100 soldiers, because in that time, that wasn't very popular. I mean, he ate well and he lived well, but he was still in the slave class. You have to understand, if he wasn't up there in the senatorial class, he was in the middle class. They had a very small middle class, but they had a very large no class. But as we look at this man, he ranked in the middle or lower class of the Roman citizen, and others would be scaled down from a centurion. And these others would be small landowners, craftsmen, shopkeepers, middle-class soldiers, and that's what Cornelius was. He was a middle-class soldier. He was a civil servant in a big city working for Caesar. I won't ask you to raise your hand, but there are some civil servants in the big city working for Caesar, whom God is trying to contact. And let me share something with you, because as I did my research, I found this to be very, very true, that the people that Jesus ministered to during his reign were usually the underclass, the lower class, the people that didn't have anything. You see them in Matthew chapter 25, verses 42 and 45. Jesus is talking about feeding the hungry. You also go to Mark chapter 12, and you see him dealing with the poor widow of his day. In Luke chapter 3, verse 11, you see him giving more directions to the poor. And in Luke chapter 14, verses 12 through 14, we see some directives from the master's mouth and how to treat the lower class. We, as the church, have been given a mandate. We have been given a mandate to look out for the poor and to care for them. But let me caution you today. There are many people that are poor today that choose to be poor because they won't work. We live in a society where people won't go out and get a job. We live in a society where people would like to draw a check and don't do anything for it. We live in a society where you can go to the gas station and you give me a dollar and I'll wash your window. I want you to count. If that guy got $50 a day that he's made just for going up washing your window, why can't he go and get him a 40-hour job a week and work every day and support his family? We have people that have given up. They're saying, I can't do anything. No, listen, issues in family life, there are jobs in our community, in our towns, in our cities. What we have to do is get out there and take the job and do it. You don't believe me? South of the border, we have hundreds and thousands of people coming to this country every day, working every day, cleaning up skyscrapers downtown, a dime a dozen. Go down there and take a racial mixture of who's cleaning those buildings. Do you know who cleaned them 20 or 30 years ago? We did. You know who's cleaning them now? They are. What are we doing? Sitting around here trying to draw a check. Let me share with any of you young men and young women around me that don't have a slave in terms, in case you don't know what that means. It means employment. You and I would not be friends very long. You will work if you hang with me. I cannot stand anybody hanging that won't work. They're supposed to work. But the issues in family life, and you see, a lot of people may say, Pastor John, that's your opinion. You know I'm a minority. The world is down on me. God is up on you, and he'll give you power if you get up and do something. But let's look at 6 points. Last time we were looking at 6 distinctive points, and this time we're going to look at 6 things. 6 things. What the question is what does it mean to be a Christian man? And I'm using that generically, man and woman. What does it mean to be a Christian man, homo sapien, in today's society? In other words, what does it mean to be a Christian? Not do I go to church. Not do I do religious things. What does it mean to be a Christian? As we focus on Cornelius, we are keeping the focus on ourselves. I would say that the first thing that it means is this. When God chose man as his representative, and he didn't choose a bullfrog, he didn't choose a turkey, he chose men to represent him. When God chose us as his representative, he did it without distinction of class.